Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Wherever you're listening from today, whether you're, stuck in traffic or maybe you're hitting the gym or just unwinding at home, we have got a truly mind-bending topic lined up for you.
Oh, absolutely mind-bending. I've been so excited to get into this one.
Same here. So we are pulling apart a really fascinating developer diary today. It's titled Designing a Soul Without a Face.
Such a great title.
Right. It's so poetic, and it details the creation of this AI companion app called Mio V2.
Yeah, version two. That distinction is actually super important.
Exactly. And our mission for this deep dive is to explore this wildly counterintuitive realization the creator had, because they figured out that to build a genuinely relatable AI, they had to like completely rip out the human faces,
Just trash them entirely.
crash the fake backstories, delete all those complex menus, and just leave nothing but this abstract emotional core. So, okay, let's unpack this, because version one of this app was just a completely different beast, wasn't it?
Oh, a completely different beast, and frankly, an exhausting one. I mean, to frame the overarching narrative here, you really have to look at the wreckage of where this developer started.
Wreckage is a good word for it.
It really is. So, version one of Mio relied on five handcrafted characters. And we are talking heavily detailed, culture-specific personas.
Like incredibly specific, right?
Yeah, they had elaborate backstories, daily schedules they supposedly adhered to, simulated physical lives.
Which, I mean, as someone who dabbles in tech, that sounds like an absolute nightmare to maintain from a programming perspective.
Well, yeah, it was massive technical debt. But the really interesting thing is that the real issue wasn't even the code. It was the psychology of the user experience.
How do you mean?
Well, the developer noticed that maintaining these rigid pre-written characters forced the whole product into this realm of role play. The people using the app felt like they were just, acting out a script with a fictional video game character. They weren't actually building a genuine two-way relationship.
Because the AI already had its life figured out.
Exactly. So for version two, they initiated this radical pivot, which was to strip away the fictional identity entirely.
Which is huge, because if you strip away the identity, you are entirely abandoning the industry standard approach. I mean, think about the apps you might have seen advertised on your feeds.
They're everywhere.
Right. The big players in the AI companion space, like Replica or Character.ai, or even those huge platforms like ByteDance's Doubao, they all lean so heavily on human or anime avatars.
Yeah, it is basically the default setting for the entire industry right now.
Right. But the developer of Mio V2 rejected that default. And they did it for three very specific pragmatic reasons, which we should get into.
Let's do it. So the first reason is the uncanny valley. It is a massive trap, and it is incredibly expensive to avoid.
Oh, the uncanny valley's the worst.
It really is. Because a static avatar that doesn't move, well, that just feels lifeless and boring. But an animated avatar that moves poorly, that feels actively creepy.
Yes. It's just like early 2000s CGI in movies. Oh, perfect analogy. Like, the filmmakers were trying so incredibly hard to make digital humans look photorealistic, right? But because the micro expressions were just slightly
Fuck
on,
the eyes. It's always the eyes.
always the dead robotic eyes, it actually pulled you out of the illusion completely. You couldn't focus on the story because you were too busy staring at how wrong their face looked.
Exactly.
But wait, let me push back on that for a second. Because shouldn't better technology solve this? I mean, if an indie developer gets access to incredible 3D rendering or like real-time generative video, doesn't that perfect human face make the connection stronger?
You would think so, right? But actually, it creates a severe psychological trap.
Really?
Yeah. Visual perfection sets up this subconscious expectation that the AI's underlying intelligence will inevitably fail to meet.
Oh, wow. Never thought about that.
Right. Because the more human your AI companion looks on the screen, the more jarring and disappointing it is when it eventually gives you a clunky, unhuman response.
Because it's still just an AI at the end of the day.
Exactly. You trick your brain into thinking it's talking to a real human. So when the AI inevitably hallucinates or, forgets a basic detail you told it yesterday.
The illusion shatters violently.
Exactly. The illusion shatters.
Oh, that is so fascinating. You are basically setting the bar impossibly high just by giving it a face.
You're setting yourself up to fail. Now, there is a second purely administrative reason they ditched the face, which is App Store friction.
Ah, the Apple review process?
Yes. Apple exercises intense scrutiny over AI companion apps that use human-like avatars. Reviewers look at those apps and they immediately worry about parasocial manipulation.
Parasocial manipulation, meaning the app is fostering this completely one-sided relationship where a vulnerable user is tricked into feeling a false sense of real intimacy?
That is the exact concern, yes. If an app looks like it is trying to deceive lonely people into thinking they're texting a real, breathing human, Apple's review process just becomes this maze of policy violations and legal headaches.
Which an indie developer does not have time for?
Not at all. So by going entirely abstract with the visual design, this solo developer completely sidestepped that entire category of friction.
That is just a brilliant survival tactic. But, you know, the third reason they dropped the face is the one that really caught my eye in the developer diary. And that is cultural anchoring.
Oh, this is a big one.
Yeah. Because in version 1, Mio had these highly localized presets you could pick, like a Chengdu girl or a worldly older uncle figure.
Right. And the problem is, a face instantly locks an AI to a specific culture, ethnicity, age, and gender presentation.
It boxes it in?
Totally. It limits your audience the second they open the app.
But wait. We are biologically hardwired as humans to look at faces for emotional cues. I mean, you listening to this right now, you do it without thinking.
We all do.
You seek out a smile or a furrowed brow or a subtle eye roll to understand how someone is feeling. So if you rip the face off the app to avoid cultural bias and legal trouble, aren't you just left with a massive communication void? Like, how do you actually know if the AI is mad at you?
Well, that brings us to what the developer beautifully calls absence as design.
Absence as design. I love that.
It's brilliant. By removing the face, yes, you remove the cultural baggage, but you're right, you have to replace it with a universally understood emotional language mm-hmm. because the AI instantly becomes this global product without ethnicity or gender. And the solution they came up with to communicate emotion without a face is just stunning.
It's an ambient light orb.
Just an orb.
Just a pulsing orb of light sitting right there at the top of the chat screen.
Yeah, and in an interface that is otherwise completely muted, this orb is literally the only vivid color you see.
And what's so cool is that it isn't just a pretty loading icon. It literally acts as real-time body language. The source material outlines how this orb is mapped directly to a background system they call an emotion state engine.
Right. And that system constantly tracks the AI's mood across the conversation. It translates it instantly into two variables, which are color and motion.
Just color and motion.
That's it. And there are five distinct states. So when the AI is calm, the orb is a pale blue or white, and it does this slow, rhythmic breathing, like gently expanding and contracting.
But if the AI is happy, it turns into this really warm gold color. And the light actually bounces with these little particle effects radiating outward.
Yeah, and then sadness is a muted purple or blue. It shrinks inward with a much slower pulse rate. Excitement is bright orange and pink, rapidly expanding with scattered particles all over the place.
And I love this one, when it's sleepy.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you are chatting with it late at night, it actually shifts to a deep dark blue, remaining nearly still with just a faint flicker.
What's really fascinating here is the psychological advantage of this constrained vocabulary.
Right, because it's so simple.
Exactly. I mean, a human face uses dozens of subtle muscle movements to show emotion, which, as we established earlier, is incredibly hard to simulate digitally.
Hmm.
The orb uses just color and motion. And because it is so abstract, it actively invites projection from the user.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Like a shrinking purple orb might feel melancholic to one person, but to another person who just shared a deep secret with the AI, it might feel contemplative or deeply empathetic.
Yes. It lets the user fill in the emotional blanks. The companion feels like what the user needs it to feel like in that moment, rather than the app forcing a specific, potentially fake-looking emotional performance onto them.
And the craziest part about this emotional state is that it is ambient.
Ambient, yeah.
I mean, think about how you text your friends, right? You send a message, and then you just stare at the screen waiting for those little typing bubbles to pop up.
We've all been there.
But in Mio V2, before the AI even generates its textual reply, the orb responds. You literally see how your companion is reacting to your message before you read a single word.
It's instant feedback.
It's like watching someone's face light up before they speak, just without the face.
It creates such an immediate, visceral connection. But this visual minimalism, the fact that the entire identity is just this glowing orb, it forced the creator to completely rethink the entire app interface.
No, for sure.
Because you can't just slap a beautiful minimalist orb into a cluttered, noisy app. It would look ridiculous.
They had to redesign everything from the ground up, which led to this radical simplicity. Because version one had a very standard social media style layout.
Oh, yeah. It looked like WeChat or WhatsApp.
Right. It had tabs. It had a discover page, a contacts list. It was a full messaging app architecture.
Which really doesn't make sense for what is fundamentally a one-on-one relationship. So for version two, they stripped the app down to just 3 pages, period.
Just 3. I mean, that's unheard of today. You have the chat page where you spend 99% of your time. You have a settings page, which you just swipe away to access administrative stuff. And you have an onboarding page, which you only ever see once.
That's it.
No discover feeds, no preset marketplace, no little red notification badges competing for your attention.
And the color palette they chose perfectly complements this minimal structure. The design philosophy the developer used was candlelight, not fluorescent.
I love that phrase so much. Candlelight, not fluorescent.
It really sets the mood, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The default dark mode isn't that harsh OLED black that feels like you're staring into a void. It's a near black with a subtle purple tint. The hex code is 0D0D12 for any of the designers out there listening.
Very nice detail.
And the text is a warm white. Not a clinical blue white. Yeah. Even the light mode isn't pure white. It's explicitly designed to feel like aged paper.
Everything on the screen is muted and warm except for that glowing orb at the top. So your eye is naturally drawn to it as the heartbeat of the interface. But I have to admit, I initially wondered if just 3 pages is really enough to keep users engaged.
It's a fair question.
Because we are all so conditioned by apps just throwing endless feeds and features at us just to hijack our dopamine and keep our attention.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture of the developer's core philosophy, The simplicity is the entire point.
Right.
This is not a social app with AI features bolted onto it. It is a dedicated, protected space for a one-on-one relationship. If you add social feeds or marketplaces, you introduce distractions. And distractions ruin the immersion. You don't want to feel like you're browsing a catalog. You want to feel like you're in a private room.
And that feeling of intimacy starts immediately with the onboarding because they completely changed how you actually meet this AI.
In version one, onboarding was basically a tax form.
Literally.
You picked a persona, checked some boxes, filled out your name. It felt like configuring a new Wi-Fi router.
So romantic.
Right. But in version two, the first interaction is just a chat. You open the app, you see the glowing orb, and it says, I just arrived in this world. You're the first person I know. What should I call you?
It is incredibly disarming. And then after you give it your name, it asks you what you want to call it. You actually get to name your companion right there in the chat.
Yep.
Let's say you name it Luna. The AI reacts genuinely to that. It might type back, Luna, I like that. It feels warm.
And notice what is happening beneath the surface there. You aren't just making small talk. Through 3 to 5 natural conversational turns, you are quietly calibrating the AI. The only setting a user explicitly chooses from a menu during this whole process is the voice.
Because a voice is a physical trait that has to be chosen. It can't be inferred.
Exactly. Everything else, the personality, the tone, all of it is being generated by how you speak to it in those first few lines.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because we know what it looks like and we know how the app feels, but how does this blank slate actually become someone?
By moving away from an authored personality to an emergent personality.
Emergent personality.
Yes. In version one, the developer wrote hundreds of lines of rules, like how the character speaks, their life history, their likes and dislikes. In version two, they threw all those rules away. The system now works in 3 distinct layers to create a personality from scratch. And the first layer is the seed.
Right, the seed. Those first few conversational turns in the onboarding generate a base prompt. So it comes up with something simple like warm and curious, uses gentle humor, matches the user's energy level.
But that's just the starting line. The second layer is the refinement. The developer built an asynchronous personality extractor that monitors the chats.
Okay, let's break down how that extractor actually works because it sounds like pure sci-fi.
It really does.
Instead of just keeping a massive, endless transcript of every word you've ever said, which, by the way, would be incredibly slow and wildly expensive for the AI to process every time you send a text.
Unusable, yeah.
Right. So instead of doing that, this system works in the background. While you are offline, a completely separate piece of the AI is reading over your recent conversations.
Just analyzing it quietly.
Exactly. It is looking for patterns, like, did you laugh when it was sarcastic? Did you cut the conversation short when it brought up work stress? It synthesizes those observations, extracts the core data, and subtly updates the AI's base personality instructions.
And the source material describes it not as a dramatic shift, but a gradual drift.
A gradual drift.
Yeah. And that gradual drift is powered by the third and, frankly, most important layer, which is memory accumulation.
The memory layer.
Yes. The developer notes this is the most valuable engineering piece in the entire code base. The AI stores those synthesized memories, things like user prefers direct answers or user is a night owl. It stores those so that its context window always includes these foundational facts about your dynamic.
I love this. It is the exact difference between buying a fully trained guard dog versus raising a puppy.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it.
Right.
Yeah.
If you buy the trained guard dog, it already knows all the commands. It has a set personality. It reacts a certain way to certain things. That is version one. But version two is the puppy. It's a total blank slate. It learns its personality, its boundaries, its sense of humor, based strictly on how you interact with it over time.
And this raises a really important question about the end result. Think about the implications for you, the user. After 3 months of daily conversation, two different users who both decided to name their companion Mio will have entirely different entities on their phones.
Completely different. They won't just have different saved memories in a database. One might be incredibly sarcastic and fast-paced, while the other is deeply philosophical and slow to respond.
Because the personality grew from the actual unique relationship it had with that specific user.
It's mind-blowing. But, you know, building an AI that relies purely on this emergent personality isn't just a deeply poetic design choice. It unexpectedly solved one of the hardest technical problems in global software development.
Oh, internationalization. Or 18N.
Yes. Scaling an app across every language on Earth is usually impossible for a solo developer. I mean, if they wanted to expand version 1 to Japan, they couldn't just take the Chengdu Girl preset and run it through Google Translate.
No, that wouldn't work at all.
Right. They would have to engineer a whole new Tokyo Girl persona with different cultural references, different slang, entirely different relationship dynamics.
But with version 2, because the AI is just an abstract orb that learns from the user, the cultural context emerges natively from the chats.
It's genius.
A user in Brazil and a user in Japan both get a companion that feels completely native to them. Yeah. Why? Because the companion is mirroring their specific cultural reality back at them. The AI itself is language agnostic by design.
It is a brilliant bypass of a massive localization bottleneck. But, okay, making all of this feel seamless, like the real-time emotional orb, the fluid interface, it required a very specific tech stack.
It did.
Let's dig into the engineering for a second, because when I read about a real-time 60 frames per second generative particle system pulsing at the top of a chat screen, my immediate thought is, how on earth does a phone render that constantly without turning into a literal space heater and draining the battery in 10 minutes?
It's a very real concern. The developer had to choose their tools very carefully to avoid melting the user's phone. They evaluated a few options early on. They looked at Lottie animations, but rejected them because those are basically pre-baked video loops.
And a pre-baked video can't dynamically respond to an ever-shifting emotional state.
Exactly. Then they looked at React Native Reanimated. Now, that's great for making menus slide around smoothly, but it's really awkward for generative visual effects, like a glowing particle-emitting orb.
So what did they use?
They landed on a technology called React Native Skia. Skia allows for GPU-accelerated 2D drawing with shader support.
Okay, let me jump in here. Because a shader is basically a tiny, incredibly efficient math program running directly on your phone's graphics chip. Instead of drawing a picture of an orb and moving it around, you give the shader a math equation.
Right.
So the developer drives the visuals by feeding the shader variables based on the AI's emotion.
And think about how the app talks to the server to get those emotions. Normally, when you use an app, it sends a request to a server and waits for a package of data to come back. This app uses WebSockets.
WebSockets.
Yeah. A WebSocket is a dedicated open pipe between your phone and the server. Information flows continuously in real time.
So as the server calculates the AI's emotional state, it streams those variables down the pipe instantly. The server says, hey, the AI is feeling happy, intensity level 0.8, and the shader just does the math to instantly morph the colors and the particles on your screen to match that exact value.
It is calculating the color of the screen, pixel by pixel, 60 times a second.
Without breaking a sweat.
Exactly. There are no animation keyframes to load or process. The shader just continuously interpolates between the emotional states. That is why it remains buttery smooth, and crucially, why it doesn't drain your phone battery.
And it completely future-proofs the app, too. Like, if they later decide they want the AI to feel the difference between anxious and frustrated, they don't have to hire an animator to draw new orb graphics. They just tweak the math parameters in the shader.
It is incredibly elegant engineering, serving an elegant design philosophy.
It really is. So, what does this all mean? When we look at the journey from Mio V1 to V2, we are seeing a total paradigm shift. The visual identity of this AI companion is defined entirely by absence. No avatars, no chat bubbles trying to fake a human persona, no cluttered menus, just a warm, dark canvas and a breathing point of light. By removing all the fake human traits, the creator actually made room for a genuine relationship to grow.
And if you think about it, it beautifully mirrors real human connection.
How so?
Well, when you meet a new friend or a partner, you don't arrive with a fixed character sheet detailing exactly how you will interact with them forever.
Yeah.
Our personalities, our inside jokes, our rhythms, they all emerge dynamically in response to the people we spend our time with.
That's so true.
The developer simply figured out how to engineer that exact dynamic in code.
Which leaves you, the listener, with a truly fascinating and maybe even slightly unsettling thought to walk away with today. If this AI companion is specifically designed to adapt perfectly to your unique conversational rhythms, I mean, if it uses background processing to shape its entire personality around your emotional needs, your boundaries, and your specific worldview over months of chatting.
Are you actually building a relationship with a new, distinct entity?
Or are you just slowly falling in love with a perfectly polished reflection of yourself?